You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Like I said, I'm Jeff. This is Allison. Months ago when Sherry kept asking me to come up and teach the parenting meeting, she was like, "What's your topic? What's your topic?" And I was like, "I have no idea. TBD, I'll let you know." And I think at some point I came up with this topic, parenting on purpose. And so I figured out a way to like wedge my burden and idea for today's meeting under this umbrella of parenting on purpose. And today we're going to be talking about kind of training our kids to be independent and competent adults. So that's going to be the topic today. So just a little bit about us, if you don't know us. I know many of you, but a little bit about us. I am a parent. I'm a husband. I'm also an educator. I've been working for Calumet Christian Schools for 23 years now. Most of that was as a teacher, primarily with fifth grade students. For the last 2.5 years, I've been the principal by the grace of God. And so my burden for today's topic comes from my time as a parent, but largely too from my time as an educator, what I've seen not only in Calumet, but also what I know is happening in the larger landscape of children and students in our culture. And, you know, parents will often ask me, and people often ask me, like, what have you noticed has changed the most over your time as an educator? And, you know, there are a lot of things. The landscape, the culture is radically changing. But the one thing I've noticed particularly is that this kind of downward trend or trajectory in the lives of our kids as they experience hardship. I've noticed that over time, our kids' resilience, their grit, their ability to endure hardship and do difficult things, I've seen that on the decline. And I think the overall research, as you look at the culture and look at what's happening with kids in our culture, it bears that out. And so a lot of books in the past several years have been written on this subject. Many of them you've probably read or heard about, books like Angela Duckworth's Grit, How to Raise an Adult, and then a couple more that I'm going to mention today. So, how about our parenting? Yeah, this is my wife. She wasn't originally put on the schedule, but as I kind of started going through this with her and talking about these ideas, you know, I would say something and then she would insert this amazing thing and this amazing commentary that I'm like, I haven't even thought about this. So literally, I think on Sunday night, we were doing this and she kept doing that. I'm like, you've got to get up here with me. She's like, I'm sorry, I got to work. Well, I'm like, well, I've got a solution for that. I'm actually your boss too. And so I immediately emailed texted our preschool director and said, Allison needs to teach the parenting meeting with me on Wednesday. I need you to find her a sub. And she's like, you're the boss. So yeah, real quick too, we have 3 kids. Max, who is 18, who will be moving out of our house here in a few months. I have no idea how that happened. Our daughter is 16. She just started driving. Both of them are at Centennial High School. And my youngest son, Wyatt, is 12 years old, and he's at Calumet. So do you want to say anything about yourself? What do you do?
What do I do? I don't know. No. I am a wife. I am also an educator. I've been teaching preschool at Calumet. This is my 8th year teaching preschool. So going along with what Jeff said, just seeing the same trends there with preschool, not only with our kids and grit, but with preschoolers as well. So hopefully I'll have some things to add in. Jeff gave me permission to interrupt him, and that is a big thing for him to give me permission to do that instead of me just doing it on my own. So I'm excited to be here. And
it's actually a gift of yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Here's the most important thing I guess I want to say about us. As we move forward, we're not experts, okay? We've got some experience. All the data is not out on our kids yet. They haven't fully arrived anywhere. People often come up to us and be like, oh my God, your kids are amazing. What did you do? And I'm like, I have no idea, actually, okay? Oftentimes I feel, and I know God is at work in spite of us. His grace is sufficient. We know that he's at work in our kids' lives. We know that he's at work in our lives, that he's always teaching us, particularly through our failures. And we fail all the time. And so I just wanted to say that in front of you today. Like, I don't come up here as an authority or an expert. I want to share our experience and some things that we've learned. But I do want you to know we fail all the time. Within the last week, I've probably failed at every single one of the things that I'm going to be promoting this morning. And so meetings like this are opportunities, and we get before information like this, they're opportunities to go back to the Lord and say, your grace is sufficient, your power is perfected in our weakness. My power works best in your weakness. I love that translation. And so I'm going to boast about it because God is at work, and he is at work through us and in us. And even as we approach topics like this and we're like, ugh, I don't do that, right? These are opportunities to go before the Lord, receive his mercy and grace, and take steps forward today, right? We can always learn something today and move forward today. So I just wanted to make sure I put that out there. So I just want to talk quickly about what is our role as parents. And I know this is a topic that's come up again and again if you've been at this parenting meeting, but just wanted to say this, that God has entrusted each of us as parents with an amazing privilege. We are so privileged that God has loaned us our kids for these 18 years that they get to be in our house, and I hope that it's not more than 18 years. But it's a stewardship that he's entrusted us with. And our goal is to raise and equip and train our children for what? Oh, yeah. Ephesians 2:10, we are God's masterpiece. He has created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he has planned for us long ago. It's important to remember and remind ourselves that God has amazing plans for our kids. He has amazing plans for us as parents. He has things that he's mapped out for our kids. Our goal is to train them and equip them the best we can in cooperation with God so that they can walk in the good things that God has planned for them. And so here are some of the things that God has entrusted us with to equip our kids with. We want to equip our kids with a biblical worldview, which we're going to see today. A biblical worldview involves the idea that the life that we've been given, the life that we have on here on earth, is hard, right? We're going to encounter difficult things and hardships and confusion. God, you know, when we come to Christ, God doesn't offer us this life that's where the road is completely clear. There are a lot of potholes along the way. We want our kids to love God and to love other people, to have healthy, other-centered relationships, to have a relative emotional stability. We want our kids to have flexibility and a willingness to try new things, to take risks, especially for God. We want our kids to be problem solvers. We want them to learn to endure hardship and learn from it and all the difficulty that will come their way in this life. And it will come. And the question is, will they be trained and ready to respond to it in a healthy way? And so that's a big role as our parents. And that's mostly what we're going to be talking about today. And when it comes to this, it's important to remember, I love this verse, Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And what I really like about this verse is the long-term vision for our parenting that it actually presents, right? Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And so the idea here is, this is kind of parenting for tomorrow. We're parenting for today, for sure. But this is a long process that God has entrusted us with. And so we're not only parenting for tomorrow, for today, we're parenting for tomorrow. We're parenting to raise these healthy adults, these spiritually vibrant adults. And so the main topics we're going to be talking about today, parenting to build independence. You'll see the word autonomy used. And we tend to think of that like, we don't want our kids to be autonomous. Well, we want our kids to be independent, and we want to build competence. We want to build grit and resilience in the face of mistakes and failures. And like I said, this is a long-term process that God has in mind today. It's not just for today. And so a lot of the examples I'm going to be sharing are going to be in these low-stakes situations. You know, while our kids are in our house, while they're under our roof, there are a lot of these very low-risk, low-stakes, real-life situations that provide wonderful opportunities to train our kids. And so as I share these things, I'm not talking about real dangerous situations, okay? I'm talking about, and sometimes, here's the thing, as a parent, I know this, and you probably know this, some of these situations that we're going to encounter, some of these opportunities, are going to feel very high risk, okay? But as we step back and look at them, we're like, well, actually, the stakes are really low here, okay? My kid is 7, okay? And so we want to remember, as we go through this, what I'm talking about primarily are these low-risk, low-stakes opportunities, even if they feel really risky in the moment. We're going to be talking about building new habits for our children, but really what the focus is going to be is building new habits for ourselves as parents. And this really is going to involve showing our kids that mistakes are actually a super important part of the process of learning. The difficulty when it comes to this idea is that this is almost always counterintuitive, okay? This is not gonna be part of probably our natural inclination as parents to allow our kids to make their own mistakes, to suffer the natural consequences of those mistakes. It can feel in the moment as unloving. Allowing your kid to knowingly make a mistake and allowing them to suffer the consequences of those mistakes can feel really unloving. And our instinct is to protect and to shelter and to keep them from making those mistakes. This is also not a one-size-fits-all approach. We need to be developmentally appropriate here and deal with our kids based on where they're at. But we need to remember, again, we've got the long-term vision in mind here. This is a long-term process. Okay. One of the books I read in the past few years is this book called The Gift of Failure. It's primarily focused on education, but it's got a lot of good stuff for parents. And this is what she says. Autonomy supportive parenting is not negligent parenting. It's not permissive parenting. Autonomy supportive parents establish specific and clear expectations and make themselves physically and emotionally present and offer guidance when kids get frustrated or need direction. And so what we're not going to be advocating for today is some hands-off approach where we just send our kids into the wild and step back and be like, well, I hope they figure it out, okay? No, along the way, we're establishing clear boundaries. We're there with them. We're providing support. We're making ourselves physically and emotionally and spiritually present in their lives. But what we're doing is guiding them through this process rather than stepping back and just taking our hands off the wheel. That's not what we're advocating for. Yeah, and this, again, is really hard, and it's really scary, but it's not a hands-off approach. The reality is the paradox of doing this is it actually is much harder than kind of over-parenting. It's going to require more prayer, more creativity, and more intentionality than trying to control everything. She goes on, autonomy supportive parenting is not the same thing as permissive parenting because discipline, respect, and rules all have an important place in this approach. Children need rules and behavioral guidelines. Most of all, children need structure. So everything we're going to advocate for today involves that. It involves boundaries and discipline and guidelines, but we're doing it all in the midst of this structure. And it's kind of confusing. She says the line between overparenting and autonomy, supportive parenting can be hazy. There are going to be times we're going to try to implement this approach. We're like, I don't know exactly what to do. Am I overparenting here? Am I too hands off? I don't know. But there is a clear difference between the kind of parenting that results in dependent, unmotivated, unsuccessful children and the kind that produces resilient, driven, intrinsically motivated kids. We want our kids to grow up living out of their own convictions and making their own choices for God. Building independence and competence through low-stake, real-life situations. So I already talked about this. All right, here are the six kind of things we're going to be talking about this morning. Okay, so we're going to be talking about giving feedback rather than giving directions, guiding our children towards solutions, valuing mistakes as much as the successes, empathizing with our children's feelings of frustration and disappointment, allowing for mistakes and allowing them, our children, to experience the natural consequences of the mistakes, and resisting our instinctive urge to rescue our kids. All right, so let's talk about this first one, giving feedback rather than direction. The reality is, it is much quicker. It's a whole lot easier. We're going to save ourselves a lot of time and headache in the short term if we're always just telling our kids exactly what to do. I think we want to transition from that to actually giving effective feedback that encourages effort and guides our children toward seeing their mistakes. This means looking for opportunities to provide supportive observations for our kids that will actually help them solve their own problems rather than giving them direct direction all the time. Certainly there will be times where we have to give direction, where we have to give specific direction for our kids. But there are a lot of real life situations that are opportunities where we can actually step back and help guide them towards seeing those solutions rather than just giving them to them. And the cool thing about this, when we do this and we step back and we guide our kids toward seeing their mistakes, toward finding solutions to those mistakes, they end up arriving at a place where the solutions that they come up with are their own. They get ownership of that solution. And what we're doing here is we're actually encouraging critical thinking and problem solving. So an example here is you look down at your, I don't know, 3-year-old, and they've got their shoes on the wrong feet. Have you ever had that happen? Right? Well, you got a couple choices here. You could look at your kid and be like, your shoes are on wrong. Put your shoes on right, okay? Or you could look at your kid and you say, I'm looking at your shoes there. Something looks off. Look at your feet. What do you think's going on there? Can you figure out what is wrong? Well, there's just a simple example of how, you know, like the kid could look down at, I'm sure at 3 years old, are they capable? Preschool teacher? Yeah, okay. I sometimes forget what kids are capable at different ages. But yeah, 3-year-old, they could look at like, oh, my shoes are on wrong. Or I haven't tied them, something like that. And so there's just a simple example of how even a 3-year-old, they could look down at their shoes and figure out, oh, I've actually put them on the wrong foot.
They may not feel like they're on the wrong foot, right? They may walk away like, yeah, it's fine. There's nothing wrong. And you're like, cool.
Yeah.
We'll work on this again later.
Yeah. Or here's one. You're doing homework with your kid, right? And they're increasingly frustrated. They're not sure what to do, and they're ready to give up, okay? And you could, instead of saying, oh, what you need to do is you need to carry the 5, or you need to multiply here. Oh, you actually divided. You should have multiplied. You should have, you know, at whatever it is. You could say, oh, it looks like you're multiplying here. And they should be dividing. Like, what else do you think you could try? And so now the kid's thinking like, oh, okay, I tried that. That didn't work. What else could I try? Well, maybe I should try this. Yeah, let's try that. Let's see what happens. Okay. And again, we're developing a process where they're starting to realize when I come up against a problem, when I have a mistake, I don't just stop and quit and need rescued, okay? when we encounter a difficulty, we encounter a mistake, when there's a solution that we can't find, we don't just stop, we continue to move on. And our job is to shepherd them into learning how to think when we get stuck.
I think too, as parents, we need to have grit in this area that your kid is going to come back and say, after you say, like, what else could you try? They may just, I don't know.
Nothing.
I don't know what it is.
I can't try anything. I've tried everything.
Yeah, and they are ready to give up quickly, and we should not be ready to give up quickly either. Like, we should be willing to continue with them to help them come up with new solutions. But I think we need a little grit in this area too, not just to give up.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to see also, there's a lot of overlap between these. You're going to see a lot of correlation. The next one is to guide children toward solution. That's a little bit what I just talked about. But this involves like looking at our kids' life for all these teachable moments, right? You're going to have so many teachable moments during your day as a parent. And so we want to find ways to guide our children toward discovering the answers to the problems that they face for themselves. Solutions to problems that our kids discover on their own will usually be remembered for much longer. I mean, I think this is absolutely true. Think about your own life and think about all the lessons you've learned even as an adult. Do you learn more through your successes or do you learn more through your failures? Do you learn more or do you remember more when you face a problem, you've had to work through it? And they're going to be understood more deeply than the answers that we actually just give them. If our children are working through a problem and arriving at a solution, they're actually going to be understand those more deeply than the ones that we just hand them and force feed them. So here's another example. Your kid is now doing their own laundry, okay? And, you know, they start to pull out, you know, they've done their laundry, they put it away, and you notice when they get dressed themselves for school the next day that their clothes are just completely wrinkled, okay? We could feel like, well, here, let me give you the five reasons why your clothes are wrinkled and how you should do it next time. Or you could say something like this: wow, your clothes are pretty wrinkled, huh? Why do you think they're so wrinkled? Okay, and they may give you an answer, and you could say, well, what do you think you could do next time to avoid that? Okay, and now they're thinking back through the whole process from beginning to end, okay, and whatever went wrong in that process, and they're thinking through, okay, the next time I do, I don't want to wear wrinkly clothes. What could I do next time? Okay, here's another one. I know you know what 5 times 3 is, so what would happen if you added another 5? Okay, we could try that. So we want to guide our children towards solutions.
Thanks. You knew. Yeah, I was thinking about this one too. There's like two different categories on this, thinking about in our day, there's times where kids come up to us because they have a problem. Like they can't zip their coat or they can't put their clothes on. You know, that would be one of the opportunities to say, well, what is the problem? What have you tried? Show me what you've done. And then you get to see where the problem is to say, well, could you try this or what do you think you could try? So there's like that's problems that they're going to come to you about. And then like the example of the kids' clothes being wrinkled, you know, they may not care that their clothes are wrinkled. They're not coming to us to say like, why are my clothes wrinkled? Like what's going on here? So there's those kind of problems that we see that we're bringing to light in their life. And I think when I think about my experiences with my kids, a lot of the examples like having the clothes wrinkled, I'm thinking, man, this reflects back on me as a parent. Like, I don't want my kid going out in wrinkled clothes or, you know, clothes on backwards, or that reflects me because people are thinking I didn't get my kid dressed in the morning. But it's not a reflection on me, right? Like, I need to take my identity away from that and remember the big picture of I'm trying to train up my kid for him to see this in the future or her to see this in the future. So taking ourselves out of it and thinking, how can I train and equip my child in this instead of making it all about myself?
That's great. This is why you bring a preschool teacher up here, right? How about this one? Oh man, this is really hard. Really counterintuitive. Do we value the mistakes our kids make as much as their successes? Especially in light of what Allison just said. We have just an overwhelming propensity to take our identity from our kids and how they're performing and what they're doing. We step back and we think about this process. If this is true, that this is this lifelong process that includes valuable mistakes, then that means we have to actually value the mistakes our kids are making as much as the successes. This one is really hard. And one way to teach our children that we value mistakes as an opportunity to learn is that we react the same during the mistakes as we do during the successes. Now, for me personally as a dad, this is really hard. Your kid does something, you see something, and often my first reaction is frustration or, "What are you doing?" You ever said that? Okay. And what do our, like, we, if our kid is, again, especially in these very low-stakes situations, our kid tries something or does something on their own for the first time, and then they make this mistake, maybe it even causes a mess, and I come in and I react really poorly, like, "What are you doing? What were you thinking?" Okay? Are they going to be very willing to take that step again, right? What did I teach them by the way that I reacted? Okay? That, yeah, you tried this new thing, but you messed up, and that's not okay. And so this means actually showing tenderness and patience when they make mistakes. And again, this is a particularly hard one for me. 1 Thessalonians 5:14, "Brothers and sisters, we urge you to warn those who are lazy, encourage those who are timid, take tender care of those who are weak." Our kids are weak, right? And we should be patient with everyone. This is a great reminder. Again, I should be tender with my kids when they make mistakes. And I should react relatively the same way. I try to in their mistakes as much as in their successes. Yeah, one way to teach our children that we value mistakes as an opportunity to learn is to support and love them as much during the mistakes as we do during the successes. Showing tenderness and patience and love with them, especially when they try something new and fail. And then we want to step in and guide them toward the lesson. What can we learn here? "Oh man, amazing, you did that. You tried this. It didn't go right. What do you think we can do next time?" And also, this is really cool, a really cool opportunity to present the gospel to our kids. Your kid does something, they fail, they make a mistake, maybe it's overt, okay? It's an amazing opportunity to share the good news with them. "Man, isn't it, I know we're not perfect, I know I make mistakes too. Isn't it awesome that this is why Jesus had to come and live and die for us and raise from the dead? Isn't it awesome that he forgives us in the midst of our mistakes?" These are awesome opportunities to continue to present the gospel to our kids over and over and over again. And we need to find creative ways and different ways to present the gospel and God's grace to our kids, especially in the midst of mistakes.
And you can do this with young kids too. Don't think that, no, you know, they have to be in elementary school or be able to understand the gospel. We did this with our kids when they were little. We do it in preschool, that, you know, "Jesus knew you were going to do this. Like, this is why he died for you. He knows that you are going to make this mistake. And isn't it cool that he still loves you?" And, you know, so being able to try and find, like Jeff is saying, that age-appropriate way of finding creative ways to share the gospel. But you never know how God is going to use that. So even if you don't see fruit of that in the moment, like speaking that truth to them and that love to them is going to be something that God will use.
Yeah. And again, I've shared this verse earlier, but 2 Cor 12:9, each time he said, "My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness, so now I'm glad to boast about my weakness so the power of Christ can work through me." We want to continue to present this idea, this truth from Scripture, that God's grace is actually sufficient in our lives. It's all we need. That Christ came, he died for us, we have his Spirit now. And so he can actually work through us in a very powerful way in the midst of our failures. So think about this, okay? Maybe your child's a little older, and they decide they want to make a box of Kraft mac and cheese, okay? So they're like, "Can I make it?" I'm like, "Yeah, go ahead. How do I do it?" "Well, the instructions are on the box. Go for it." okay? And so they make mac and cheese. You see them eating the bowl. You're really proud. Wow, they made a bowl of mac and cheese themselves. This is amazing. And then you go to the stove and caked on the bottom of the pan, molded to the pan itself, is a layer of fried mac and cheese, okay? Again, my reaction, what were you thinking? What did you do here, okay? Do you know how long it's going to take me to clean this pan, okay? I could certainly react that way, or I could react with tenderness and patience and say something like this, wow, really awesome you made lunch for yourself for the first time. Really proud that you did that. But I did notice that there is mac and cheese caked to the bottom of the pan, and there's a crazy smell in the air. The smoke alarm's going off. Why do you think that happened, right? You could say, what do you think went wrong here? Oh, I left the stove on, okay? Or the heat was too high, or any one of the other observations that our kids are going to make, right? You say, what do you think you could do differently next time, okay? And allow them again to think through, okay, what went wrong? What's the solution the next time I do it? And so now instead of, if I react poorly, they may think, well, I guess I just can't make mac and cheese anymore. And we may even be tempted to say something like that. Next time you want mac and cheese, just let me know and I'll do it for you, okay? And what are they learning again? I just don't want to try new things because my dad will react this way. Or I guess I aren't competent enough to do this. Okay. Again, we want to encourage our kids trying new things, even though we know maybe in the end it just might not go well. We could say something like this: I'm so proud of you for sticking with that, even though that was really hard for you. You know, some of us are parents and we sit down with our kids and do homework at night, and it can be really hard. And there's tears, and there's complaining, and they want to stop. And we should continue to encourage, like, let's stick with this, let's do this. Won't it feel good when we're done and you know that you did this? And we want to encourage that and show how proud and encouraged we are that they stuck through with something hard. And of course, this is related. We should do all of this with a lot of empathy, a lot of understanding. We should empathize with our feelings of their feelings of frustration and disappointment. Again, this is an area I fail a lot at, okay? When our kids, especially one of our kids our kids are all very, very different, okay? One of our kids is just like, whatever, it's cool, okay? One of our kids is a little more driven and will stick with something and go through something, and one of our kids melts down all the time. This kid is an active reporter, and there's never any question as to how they're feeling, okay? And as a parent, that reaction gets the strongest reaction out of us, okay? Because I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear you complain. I don't want to hear you bargain. I don't want to hear you blame shift. And my initial reaction is, just stop. Just stop. Well, they don't, for some reason, they don't feel very understood or heard by me because of that. Okay. And so what we want to do is we want to let our children know that we understand what they're going through. We understand, I get that this is really hard. I know that math is really hard for you. Okay. I know it's really hurtful when your friend says something mean to you. I've experienced that too. I know that's hard. I bet that's hard, okay? I get mad too. I get frustrated too. I wanna quit too. You want them to know that, like, hey, I understand exactly where you're at. I understand exactly what you're going through. Yeah. But isn't it's actually really rewarding when I do something hard and I get to figure it out. That's an awesome process. So we want to identify with where they're at, but we want to let them know, like, this is what it looks like when we actually get to work through it. Next, how about allow for mistakes? Ooh, that sounds pretty risky. And we want to allow our children to experience the natural consequences of those mistakes. That seems even riskier, okay? Again, we're talking about very low stakes, low risk situations. We're allowing our kids to burn the mac and cheese onto the pan, okay? Because we know that in the end, they're going to learn more from that mistake in the long run than they will from just nailing it right the first time. All right, this is a book called Parenting with Love and Logic. This has kind of been a guidebook for a lot of parents for a lot of years in this fellowship. It certainly has at Calumet. We've done training workshops on this. This has been a book that's been passed around. Maybe you're familiar with it. It's a little older, but I wanted to share this crazy story with you that he shares in this book, okay, and see what you guys think. It says, Cole, age 9, was a sleepyhead. Every morning, he'd beat to death the snooze alarm on his bedside clock, okay? So Cole obviously has some trouble getting up for school in the morning. Cole takes the bus, by the way. So one day, Cole roars downstairs 20 minutes before school was to start. So Mom sees Cole walk in. What does she say? Warmly and firmly, she says, Oh, glad to see you're up. What do you think you're going to do today in your room? Cole's like, in my room? What are you talking about? I'm going to school. Well, that's good. How are you going to get there? Well, you're going to take me, of course, Cole replies. Oh, sorry, Mom says. I can't do that today. I'm actually busy with housework all day. Feel free to arrange other transportation or spend the rest of the day in your room so I can do my work without any interruptions, just like on other school days. Does this sound insane? Unloving? We can be honest. Yeah, this sounds a little extreme. When lunchtime, she continues, when lunchtime comes around, feel free to make something for yourself, Mom continued. Oh, and if I go on errands this afternoon, I'll take care of getting a babysitter for you. But don't worry, if you can't pay for the sitter, you can pay me back later this week. Of course, when the next morning rolled around, Cole wanted an excuse note. Well, Mom made me miss school yesterday. She better write me an excuse note so I can get off of the work I got yesterday. Oh, I understand that. I know how nice it is to not explain why you were absent from school. But you know, I only write excuse notes when you're sick. Hope it works out okay with your teacher, though. Have a nice day under the circumstances. This seems really extreme, right? This is allowing your kid to experience the natural consequence of their decision, their choice to continue to slam the alarm button. I mean, you know, ideally, like, we should be having conversations about implementing approaches like this along the way, even before they happen. There have been several times, like, I'll get a text from Allison, like, all the time, be like, hey, this happened. I'm thinking about this. What do you think I should do? Mm-hmm. Okay? And so, you know, you could stop and say, like, why don't you go back up to your room? I'm going to think about it's fine to give some time, okay? We're not all going to immediately know, like, okay, I've got this plan if they miss school again. And again, Cole's been doing this for a while, right? Okay, he does this every day. This is probably not gonna happen on the first day that he does it, okay? I'm guessing Mom's been in a situation where several times she's had to take him to school. So that would be an opportunity to talk to your spouse and be like, what are we gonna do about this? I'm done taking the school. He's not learning his lesson. And so we're gonna wanna have conversations. Now, we're definitely gonna make sure that we're on the same page as our spouse as we try to implement this approach, okay? Because like this approach and other parenting approaches, they're not going to work if our kids have different, understand there are actually different expectations and different consequences, different approaches from each spouse. And so with this approach or any other approach that you and your spouse try to take, you need to come to an agreement on what are we both comfortable with, what are we both okay with implementing, and then going with that. It's not going to work if dad just says, you know, takes an extreme approach, and Mom's not willing to follow through or hold to it or vice versa. And so that's a great point. We need to be on the same page.
Yeah. I think too with that is thinking about what goal you're trying to accomplish for your kid. because there's been times where we have not been on the same page or we see it differently, where I'm like, that his idea of low risk is high risk to me. And so, you know, it was like, well, let's talk this out and what is the goal we're trying to accomplish? And that has helped me to submit then to the practical plan that we're going to come out in the end of like, okay, what's the big picture we're trying to accomplish? Because sometimes we are going to see differently. Yeah. So I think having that bigger picture of what are we trying to accomplish and then go at it that way.
Yeah. I remember even hearing as a teacher, even before I ever had kids, you know, that the best thing we can do for our kids is that they have this expectation in mind that if I do X, I can expect Y, right? And so it's important that, again, we're on the same page, that our kids understand that this is, my parents are a unified team here. And if I do this, then I could probably expect that if I, you know, that they're both going to respond in this way. And if I go to mom and complain about it, she's going to give me the same answer as dad. This does feel like kind of an extreme case, right? Like, I'm just not going to, like, paying for your babysitter. I'm not going to take you to school all day. But, like, you know, I'm really busy right now. Like, when we can get around to getting you to school today, we'll do it. Could be something like that. So you need to figure out, like, again, what's the situation? What's the history? What level are you comfortable with here? Okay. Good question. All right, let's keep moving on. Last thing I want to talk about is we need to resist the urge to rescue. Again, our instinct as parents is to rescue our kids, to keep them safe, to, in many ways, to keep them comfortable, to keep them happy. And we need to, if again, like Allison talked about, the goal in mind is what we're trying to cooperate with God to produce in their lives is these successful, healthy children who become adults. If this is true, then we need to, at times, resist the urge to just rescue them from hardship. Again, we're not talking about high-risk, real danger situations here. You know, Cole going to school a day later and getting a zero on all of his work. Like, Cole's nine, okay? Cole's not filling out any college applications tomorrow. It's a really actually, and you're going to hear this from the principal, from a principal. That's a low-risk thing. Okay, and the value of those zeros to me are actually much more valuable than him getting all of his work done that day and not learning the real lesson that I want him to learn, okay? And so we need to resist the urge to rescue. Love and logic, if we never let our kids struggle to get through something they want or work through a problem for themselves, then when things actually get difficult later in life, they won't suddenly turn and get tough. They won't turn tough and get going. Instead, they'll just quit. And so again, we think about the long-term vision of what we want to produce and what actually, think through the idea of what actually rescuing them at every moment will actually produce. They won't just leave our house and then someday, you know, the light bulb will go off. I'm like, oh, I actually need to be tough. Okay. Chances are they've just learned to quit, or they just learned that if I make a mistake, if I don't do something, I'll just get rescued from it. Hebrews 12, 5 to 7, 11. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his own children. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. I love that passage, okay? This idea that we're actually, the hardship that we're allowing our kids to endure will actually produce a harvest of righteousness and peace if we allow them to be trained by it. And again, part of our role as a parent is cooperating with God, with discernment, with wisdom, and allowing our kids to be trained by their failure and the hardship that they're going to endure. All right. So just to wrap up here, God has given us an amazing privilege of training and equipping our kids to become adults who can navigate the road ahead. That's the big vision. We actually, as parents, want to train and equip our kids, and you may have heard this before, to travel the road ahead instead of actually preparing the road ahead for them. Because that road ahead for them is actually, it's not clear. It hasn't been paved. It hasn't been plowed. It's full of potholes. It's full of actual danger. And so we want to prepare our kids when they're in our house in these low-risk situations to travel the actual road that will be before them. And failure and hardship will be an important part of that process. We need to remember, God is with us. God is gracious. His grace is actually sufficient, that he wants to work in us and through us, that he's going to teach us as much as he's going to teach our kids as we try to cooperate with him in this process. Yeah, God, just thanks so much for this opportunity. Pray these conversations would continue, that you would show us your amazing grace in these situations. We're not going to carry this out perfectly, Lord. But all of these things are opportunities to show our kids grace and to learn ourselves and to be taught by you and to love our kids. I thank you, Lord, you are doing the heavy lifting in our kids' lives. You've got their backs. You're for us. You're for them. And Lord, we can trust that they're in good care in your hands. And so we don't have to worry about doing this perfectly, Lord. We just want to put one foot in front of the other and do our best to shepherd our kids toward what you want. Amen.